now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Well, welcome to IUP Plus. This is our streaming show today where we go in depth and beyond the headlines of Inside Utah Politics. Of course, our Sunday show airs on ABC 4 at 8 and 4 on Sundays, if I didn't mention that. So we invite you to join us there as well. Also, all the stories I try to get up online, abc4.com, Inside Utah Politics there. Our YouTube channel is where you can see all of this, all these streaming shows, our Sunday shows, they all go up there. So that is like your one-stop shop for all things Inside Utah Politics.
Link, comment, and like, comment, and subscribe.
Like, comment, and
maybe
subscribe.
Maybe don't link, though.
Don't or send the link to all your friends.
Right, send the link to all your friends. I'm joined today by some fabulous women today. I love this all-female panel today. Sarah Real and Leah Murray, thanks for being here.
It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, stoked.
It's going to be so fun. Okay, I have to point this out because I pointed out when there's two Republicans, but there are technically two Democrats here today, or people with...
Utah Democrats.
Utah Democrats.
So oh, I love that.
Maybe
yeah.
that's
I feel like
thing.
In California, we would not be considered a Democrat.
Yeah. Or in Oregon or something.
You're Democrat.
Or in Oregon, those
yeah,
are the
possibly.
States. I got you.
Democrat
got you.
Lights.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. We'd be adjacent.
Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
just say you know how to be a Democrat in Utah.
That's right.
Right.
That's
exactly. Right. Okay, so let's dive in. Producer Peter's here as well. Hi, Producer Peter.
I am. Hi, folks.
It's good to have you here. Okay, this week has been a doozy with the Supreme Court and the redistricting order. So if you're living under a rock, this is what happened. The lower court has halted Utah's current congressional maps. But what happened this week is the legislature has now appealed to the Utah Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has said, give us all your arguments because we're probably going to look at this. Meanwhile, the judge in the third district case redid her order. And I want to ask you guys about this because this is a really interesting part of her new order. So she basically amends her old order and says, I cannot order the legislature to draw new maps. It is a violation of the separation of powers for the judicial branch to tell the legislature what to do. And this is something the legislature has been kind of complaining about and the Republicans in the legislature have been complaining about. And so now the judge is saying, yeah, I can't order you. However, I have set a punishment if you don't. So it's kind of this weird thing. Leah, take this for me. I mean, what does this mean? What does the judge's new order mean?
Right. Well, I think it's an acknowledgement of having made a mistake. And a little bit, I think, right, someone must have talked to her and said, you are now asserting judicial authority that doesn't actually exist. I also think she's probably sensitive to the fact that legislators across my social media, maybe yours as well, were calling for impeachment. I think there's conversations around, like, what the judiciary would look like, you know, how... Anyway, when we talked about this originally, I thought the judiciary is very much stepping in and, you know, smacking the wrist of the legislature, and maybe she's getting feedback behind the scenes that this is too hard of a hit,
yeah.
right? And that it's not going to sustain. And maybe knowing that it's going to the Supreme Court, she's kind of backfilling her argument to make it a better argument for the Utah Supreme Court. But a little bit, it just seems very much an acknowledgement of I was wrong. There's a line and I went past it.
Well, so this is interesting, Sarah. When I talked to the plaintiff's lawyers, they were basically like, oh, no, this isn't really a reversing course. This is basically like her saying, oh, I need to just change the language here because while I can't order them to redraw the congressional lines, I just kind of have to write it in a different way so I'm not requiring them. But still, we are sitting on unconstitutional maps, right? Because Judge Gibson at this point has nullified them, Sarah. So what happens here?
Yeah, honestly, it would be nice if the legislature did what Judge Gibson is doing, which is saying there's a line and we crossed it, which is why we're here in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine. I hate the how we've like taken these judges and made them so political and turned into this. And you know, when you have a supermajority, you can just be like, let's impeach them, right? You can do those sort of things, which is why a supermajority is not a great way to govern, mm-hmm. right? And so I wish, like, I you know, right now we're going to see it appealed, I think. And we're just having this nitpicking of what the language says and this and that. And it all comes back to the principle of the matter, which is that the legislature overstepped their bounds when they ignored the maps of the redistricting committee, right? And I don't know, when you teach your students political science and you teach them about this, my students are like... They're like, regardless of their political party, and I do teach in a very non-biased way, mm-hmm. when they just hear about what the legislature did with these maps, they get upset, right? And so it's right now we're sitting in this weird spot where, you know, I respect the judge for going back and clarifying in her language, but it's still on principle what the legislature did was unconstitutional.
Right, but the answer is we're not talking about that now. Mm-hmm. So a little bit, her rewriting her order, which the plaintiffs are saying is her cleaning up the language, actually muddies the whole conversation.
It kind of feels that way.
Right, and so instead of having this where we're on point on did they cross a line, mm-hmm. did they not do what they were supposed to do, now we're discussing whether it's about judicial review and judicial power, which is, I think, not where any plaintiff on this wanted to be.
No, no. And, you know, sometimes I believe in, you know, being fair and truthful and honest and all the work that, it, as you know, as someone that's an elected official. But at the same time, like, sometimes when you go with confidence in your decision, you could win. Then we see that the Republicans doing that a lot.
Yeah, and I wonder, too, if the legislature's kind of outcries that the judge's ruling had gone too far was something the plaintiffs wanted to flag because they knew it was something the Supreme Court would nail them on, and then this, it would almost solidify the stay, right? Right now, we're not sure yet if they're going to grant the stay. They're going to look at all the arguments. But the judge going back, I mean, what do you make of that, Leah? The judge going back and saying, I overstepped here. Does that clean it up with the Supreme Court?
No, and then the question should have been, they should have risen that question to the Utah Supreme Court. Does the judiciary have the authority to tell the legislature, when you're misbehaving, you have misbehaved, and now fix it? Right? And so I just have to wonder, these are not, how do I say, just robots, right? These are humans mm-hmm. operating in space. I'm willing to bet they all have social media. They're seeing the calls for impeachment, which to a judiciary might feel, I don't know, I don't want to say threatening, but might feel like, all right, look, if we wander into this water, now all of our power might down the road become, we might get weakened across the board. I just, a little bit, she should not have revisited it, right? She should have let it go.
In a space where all of our judicial branch in the state of Utah has been basically bullied by the legislature for the last 2 years since from a lot of their decisions. And so I can't imagine being a judge, nonpartisan. You have this incredible career that gets you there, right? And then opening up social media and seeing all the terrible things people are saying about you. I'm not saying that that revisiting and having clarification on the case was a good idea, but I'm sure it was pretty challenging for her to have to face those things.
Yeah, I can tell you as a reporter, it made things really confusing for me because I'm reading her order yesterday, and then I knew that the legislature had already filed with the Utah Supreme Court. So I'm thinking, is she like nullifying her order? What does this mean? And so the plaintiff's lawyers are telling me one thing, but I'm seeing lawmakers saying, no, she's admitting here that she violated separation of powers. And does that factor in to the Utah Supreme Court's decision? I mean, they have to go with her current ruling, right? Someone correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think that's right. That's the ruling that's on the books, right? So,
but I agree with Leah. They should have just appealed it up to the Utah Supreme Court and said, can she do this?
Right.
She should have been a better route to go.
Stayed quiet and let that question get raised by the legislature later.
Well, it wasn't the legislature. It was the plaintiffs who flagged it for her.
Right.
So in her new order, she's saying, oh, I didn't mean to order you. Or I'm admitting that I can't order you, right? And so now she's saying, I can't order you. She's like a scorned mother almost, right? She's saying, you don't have to clean your room, but if you don't, here's your punishment.
Right.
Is that ordering?
No, but again, it's weakening. I mean, so the fact that we're talking about it, we are not talking about whether the commission should have had authority. We're not talking about whether the legislature should have listened to the commission. Now we're going into a conversation and it's about separation of powers. It's not about whether initiatives are a good idea. I mean, all the interesting questions that need to be settled that we talked about last week with this are gone. Now we're talking about, does the judiciary have the authority to judge?
Well, to be fair, that is what the legislature is trying to appeal. Right? They're appealing the remedy here. They're not appealing the merits, right, of whether initiatives, like whether the legislature can overturn initiatives.
Right.
That will come later if they get this stay, right? So that's kind of what's happening right now. Okay, well, I'm sure by Thursday's episode, we will have a brand new subject to talk about. Just in her order, she says, the Utah Supreme Court has now said both sides need to brief on this issue, which just means give us your arguments and then, you know, lawyers are kind of telling me it's likely they're going to rule on that, because why would they brief it so quickly? And so, all the briefs have to be in this week by Thursday. So why would they brief it that quick if they weren't going to hear it?
Right.
So
right.
That will be coming, I imagine. All right, let's move to another topic. This should interest you both, because you're both professors, both teachers.
Adjunct. I don't want to insult tenured professors by calling myself a professor. Adjunct professor.
Does that make offend
sure
you?
It takes a lot of work to be a tenured faculty, and I'm not one of those. I'm just a measly old adjunct.
I like that, but I am not someone who would be offended, but you're not wrong. There are people in the world who would be offended.
You would not elbow her and be like, adjunct.
Absolutely.
Adjunct. Well, you're both in the education space.
We both teach.
Yes, mm-hmm. You both teach. And this week, the Salt Lake Tribune came out with an article talking about some new standards for disciplining teachers. Sarah, I'm going to let you take this one. This is coming from one of your cohorts on the State Board of Education. I don't think we introduced kind of who you are and what you guys do, but you are on the State Board of Education.
And my views and opinions do not reflect my teaching institution, which is Salt Lake Community College, or the State Board of Education.
That is fair. And thank you for clarifying that. So one of your cohorts, Christina Bogus, is coming out with a whole slew of rules about when teachers should be disciplined. And I think the one that's getting a lot of pushback is her definition of if teachers exhibit immoral behavior.
Right.
And everyone's kind of like, how do you judge that? And we know that Christina Bogus is pretty uber conservative. Is she just trying to push that she doesn't like some of the things the teachers are teaching here? Tell me what's going on at the State Board of Education.
I wish I knew what her intention was, but I do know. So it's called UPAC, which is basically Utah Professional Practices Advisory Committee.
That's who disciplines teachers.
Yes. And so if a teacher needs to be disciplined, it goes through a process. They can get a lawyer. There's a panel of teachers. There's legal all involved that determine what the licensing, if they're going to remove their license, if they're going to put a hold on their license for a few years, all of that happens at UPAC. And this was open. These rules were opened up because of a bill that was passed last year by Katie Hall, Representative Hall, that kind of changed the levels or like the way that UPAC, is ran. They were tiny rule changes. Mm. They were tiny rule changes where Board Member Carol Lear and Board Member Jenny Earle agreed on the rule as it was written.
And they're on opposite ends of the political spectrum. Yeah.
Days before our board meeting, we had a new draft uploaded by Member Bogus, and it was a complete overhaul of how we identify teachers, what is considered needing discipline. It is so overreaching and so robust that teachers could get in trouble for like the most minor infractions, right? And usually
it's sort of subjective a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. And, what previously when we've worked through the UPAC rules, what we've done is we have done it in a way that was like collaborative with administrators and legal and the board to identify how to go through these procedures. She just rewrote the whole thing. Hmm. It's a wild read, if anyone is interested in board, to go read it. And the part that's really hard for me is that it makes our teachers feel undervalued, and it makes them afraid to teach. Mm. And I don't like that. And I've been getting dozens and dozens of emails from teachers saying, please do not vote for this. This is frightening. And, there are ways that her rule is written, the ways it could be interpreted. Teachers could get in trouble for, like, supporting. Let's say a kid is really into dinosaurs, and the teacher encourages this kid's passion for dinosaurs, and the parents are religious, and they don't, the teacher doesn't know, and she's like, I encourage them to, read this new dinosaur book that's approved from our sensitive materials curriculum, and the parent could go and complain about this teacher. We're religious and we don't believe in dinosaurs, and the teacher could go through the punishment for that. That's wild to me.
This could stay on their record for a long time and kind of risk their careers in some way.
Right.
Leah, so Member Bogus, I've heard her kind of speak publicly about this, and she's saying we kind of need clear definitions for the rules, and this was her attempt to make clear definitions. Do you believe it's doing that?
No. Well, how do I say, again, like the 19th century is calling Member Bogus and want their politics back. I was telling you all off the air, my great-grandmother was a teacher in the 1800s. I have seen her contract, and it basically said, cannot eat ice cream on a Sunday, right? And so I went and Googled, what were rules for teachers in the 1800s? You may ride in a buggy with a man if the man is your father or your brother, right?
Oh, geez.
Women teachers who marry or engage in unseemly conduct will be dismissed. This is so old school. I mean, mean, the thing that I saw was you're not allowed to use profanity. And a little bit, I want to say, what teacher has ever used profanity in a classroom? Or what? How, so then again, it begs the question, what do you define as profane? Like, so maybe, you know, what complaints are you getting that there are problems out there, that teachers are running amok, swearing, you know, showing students books that they shouldn't be seeing? Every teacher has been under the microscope now. I don't know. You disagree with me if I'm wrong. I feel like for years, these things are not happening. So all of this just feels like virtue signaling on the backs of public servants who take care of our children. It is
we're overworked and underpaid. And you know, the thing that it's really interesting to me that she's a licensed educator in Utah. And it feels like weird governing to be making the rules for how you would be disciplined. Right. And I don't like that.
Because these rules would apply to her.
Yes, exactly. And that feels icky to me. And, you know, the thing is like, if we were to follow and that rule passes as she's written it, we would have hundreds and hundreds of more cases going through UPAC. We don't have staff. We don't have enough time and resources to go through all those UPAC cases. It would be impossible. It'd be like asking the legislature, "Hi, we need 20 more full-time equivalent staff positions to manage all of these infractions by teachers that are so minor." It's a terrible idea.
And the other thing I don't like about it, you brought it up earlier, like the insensitive or what is sensitive materials rules, right? And so what we found was there's like one or two families that were challenging all the books in the Davis County school system, and you're like, so now I'm going to generate all sorts of work for staff because maybe there's one or two sets of parents who really have a thing about dinosaurs. I'll just go with your example, and that just seems ridiculous. I also didn't see in the rule any kind of like, how do we set up guardrails to make sure this isn't just a family who's angry using this system to basically harass teachers in a school district?
Or you're going off of a third grader's
interpretation
of what happened in class, they're very angry parents versus an adult educator that's licensed. And so
I have a first grader at home. I know those directions that come home. I'm like, what are you supposed to do? Like, I don't even understand this. So, Sarah, what does the board do here? I know that there are several conservative members on the State Board of Education. Does this pass? What happens?
We have a special meeting on Thursday, so it's an emergency meeting, and we will see what happens. I'm hoping that it does not pass. I think that there's enough rational human beings on this board that also think this is overstepping and not realistic and not collaborative. Like I said before, when we have gone through writing these UPAC rules, it has been a big collaborative effort with LEAs and administrators and teachers and everyone. This was just one person, I think, sitting down and deciding they thought they knew best how all teachers should be disciplined in the state of Utah.
And I don't know how you deal with this, but those Utah State Board of Education meetings are like marathon meetings. And so, like, I can imagine that there is going to be objection after objection after objection, and you will go through and you will change the comma on something and you will add the word "and" here, and then everyone has to approve it. It's insane, those meetings. Yes. Sorry, but I've had to watch them before.
I think they average about 14 hours on our first day, 12 to 14.
Do we need a law to change? Do we need to, like, space it
there
out?
There was one proposed in the legislature last session, and I was like, well, that means we're just going to have more meetings.
Yeah.
Because we'll have a hard stop, and then we'll have to go and have another special meeting like we're doing this week.
Because are you really functioning after 12 hours of listening to policy and changing?
No, you're sleeping. Like, Representative Moore fell asleep in that committee meeting, right? The answer is nobody is functioning well.
Yeah. No. Okay, we'll have to see. All right, let's move on to another topic that is big here in Utah. The Olympics are coming in 2034. This week, state leaders announcing they've raised $200 million so far. They're touting this as never been done before in the history of Olympics, going back to Greece, right? And the first Olympics. What does this amount of money mean, you guys?
Do we know how much the Olympics in Greece cost?
No.
I mean, like, how can you tout that?
No, I love that question.
It's a good question.
The answer, I think it kind of reveals, and I was watching yesterday in ABC4 when they were announcing this.
She was complaining I wasn't on TV. Yeah, let's put it that way.
Where's Lindsay Ayers? It's 4 o'clock. But, right, it does show people love what's happening. Mm-hmm. And what I saw in that conversation at that announcement, podium 34, excuse me, I'm so sorry, podium 34, they were all about, it's unity, right? And this is something we can all get behind, and this is something that we care about. And a little bit, just on the back of what we just talked about, which is a very divisive move by one of your colleagues, maybe the Olympics is something we don't have to
be divisive about.
Yeah, like yell at each other about.
And I would love that.
Yeah, if there's like hundreds of millions of dollars rolling in because people are on board for shared identity and things that make us... what were they saying? Healing the world through, bringing the world together through sport. I can't remember. Anything.
Yeah.
It was all healing and wonderful. But I was here for it. I mean, yeah. I was like, oh,
it's
wouldn't
very
it be
kumbaya.
Nice? Yeah,
yes.
But maybe we need a little bit of that. So I read all of that money, not as much operationally, like how much do you actually need, but a little more, oh, that's a good sign, right? It's showing that people in our community are caring about sending unifying messages rather than divisive messages.
Yeah. I think, did they estimate $4 billion is about what we need for the Olympics?
I think they said 300 million, yeah. Or billion?
4 billion, I think
billion.
I saw.
Wait, did we raise... Peter, correct us here. Yeah. Did we raise 200 billion?
We need 4 billion.
So the target that Podium 34 had set was 300 million through this private fundraising arm.
With the
understanding that more money is going to come from elsewhere. But right now, they're just saying, great start to this particular effort.
Right.
So like their campaign is 300 million, and what they've just raised is 200 million.
Yes.
Yes. But overall, as a state, we need 4 billion. Billion dollars.
Okay.
That's what I read in the Deseret News article.
Okay.
And I say that because...
are you bringing us down?
I thought we were being cool. I was like, we were all here happy.
Yeah. Okay.
In all honesty, I looked at the list of donors and I was like, do any of them have single lesbian daughters that I could marry into? Because there is a lot of money here. Okay. That was my first thought.
The Smiths, the Millers.
I'm like, the Hudsons. I'd love to be in their families.
This has become a dating app, apparently.
Yeah. No, I say the 4 billion because Utah is a state that prides itself. We put a lot of, how many times have you heard, we did not go into debt during the Olympics. Mm-hmm. We did not go into debt during the Olympics. And if you looked at like what happened in Brazil and a bunch of other places, like it was sad what it did to those communities. They built things that were never used again. I mean, it was just horrendous. And so I think Utah is going to stay really firm on, we're going to raise this money. We're going to find a way to get this money. And we're not going to go into debt over these Olympics because I think that's something they care deeply about. And honestly, I love it.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that.
Right. But isn't the reason, I'm so sorry, as someone who is from New York that went into debt.
Yeah.
Having an Olympics. But isn't part of the reason why we didn't go into debt was because the federal government
matched us?
Yeah, gave
Mr. Romney.
Yeah.
Yes, Mr. Romney did. But then they also raised, like, I don't know, $44 million dollars to make it balance.
Yeah, so a little bit, and again, I'm all on the kumbaya, so let's be clear, I'm a huge Olympics fan. But a little bit, I wonder, it's a new regime, if you will, and there's new $36 trillion in debt, and maybe I wonder if that becomes a harder sell.
Yeah.
Speaking of Mr. Romney, you have 1 minute to talk about this last story. Again, the Salt Lake Tribune put out a satire column that was basically saying a lot of people who are LDS like to say celebrities are LDS because it helps them like identify with people. And then on the converse side of that, they were saying, we take people who are LDS and say, did you hear they're not LDS anymore? So Mitt Romney was one of those examples. Mitt Romney came out and was like, I'm a true blue LDS. And then the Trib went back at him and said, we were kidding. This was a joke. Like, we understand you're true blue LDS. You guys found this hilarious.
Oh, I found it so funny.
Yeah.
I was like, Mitt, like, read the article. You're a very smart man. I read your book, Coppin's book about Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're smart enough to read the whole article to know it's satire. But if he didn't, I'm like, he's so cute. He's so cute that he didn't get it. But at the same time, I think maybe, and then the first time I saw his tweet, I thought, is he trying to fit in with the Republicans again by hating the Salt Lake Tribune? Maybe. He's like, guys, I hate him too. Look. And then it's like, oh, just kidding. They were joking.
But I also love, quite frankly, afterward when he goes, satire one, me zero.
Right.
Like,
perfect.
They got me. If you're going to make a mistake like that, be a little indignant in the wrong direction, the best way to handle it is to laugh at yourself. And I loved that.
Yeah. I do adore Mitt Romney. I think it was just like, Grandpa didn't get the joke.
Bless Mitt Romney.
Truly.
And he's still LDS. He commented that he goes to the temple and he goes to sacrament meeting every week. So there you go for those who care. Leah Murray, Sarah Rail, thank you both
for
your insights today. We appreciate it. And as always, you can find us wherever you podcast. You can find us online. Just search for Inside Utah Politics and you'll find us there. And we will see you next time.